This is the Punk News Podcast, episode 275. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I am recording for you in my basement here in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
Hello, Brooklyn.
And out of Grand Rapids, am I right?
Yeah,
okay. I have a memory. Out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, Mr. Tom Trauma.
How you doing, guys?
So, we came into this week thinking it was a light week, but I seem to feel like we have a lot of stuff. And I don't know if this is just because we've all experienced things that we want to talk about, or that there's actually a legitimate amount of punk news that we're going to talk about, but we're going to see. We are going to jump into the mailbag in just a second and respond to a few of your letters. But before we do that, I have a question, and this is the pre-ask question. So the question is for you, the Punk News Podcast listeners, all three of you. I was taking a drive home the other night from the horrible city of Toronto, and I was on the Queen Elizabeth Way, which is the big highway between Toronto and Niagara. And I'm driving, and I'm tired, and my ears are all blown out from having been at a concert. And I'm listening to a bunch of podcasts, one after another, as I'm driving. And I realized that, like, to some degree, at least compared to ones that are you know, quite professionally done, ours sounds like ass. So I'd really like to get some good mics. At least a couple. At least one for John and myself, and then for a few of our regulars as we start to be able to acquire mics. So I need to figure out how we're going to accomplish that, because this isn't a money-making venture here. So the usual things that people do is they'll set up a Patreon fundraiser, but I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I want to try to get people on the hook forever, because we don't really do this to, you know, benefit anyone but our own personal neuroses. So we could do that. We could do some sort of Kickstarter-y thing. I don't know, but I have a feeling that I want to try it. So write us, podcast@punknews.org, and tell us, would something like that be super annoying if we did some sort of fundraising? Should we just, like, you know, suck it up and stop buying beer and go buy some mics with the beer money? Or I don't know. I'm curious what you, the Punk News Podcast listener, thinks of that. So I'm not actually asking you for anything yet, but at some point I might, and I'm curious what you think. John, what's in the mail?
Well, we got a couple of things in the mailbag this week. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. The first thing in the mailbag is from a reader. And it's from a reader, Richard. Richard's written in a couple of times. We like Richard. Here's what Richard said. "Hey, guys, I was sad to hear of the passing of Dickie Hammond of Leatherface. Due to my fallow period during most of the 90s, no internet in those days, I dropped out of the scene due to a lot of work and personal commitments, and I totally missed Leatherface. My experience was HDQ. You Suck in particular was a very influential song on my way of thinking, not to mention it was a great track. I never got to see them live, well, not that I remember. They may have played The Mermaid in Birmingham, I could have forgot, but there weren't that many venues to play in 1985, and they probably played there at some point. Who knows if I was there? Anyway, it made me dig out my two LPs and give them a whirl, so sometimes out of truly bad things, good things can happen. I've also put Leatherface Mush's LP on my Amazon wish list, so who knows what Santa might bring. Keep up the good work, and I love listening to the podcast. P.S. I agree with the Americans and the Canadians." And Richard's from the UK, mind you. "P.S. I agree with the Americans and the Canadians. Oasis are total dicks, Liam in particular. The only thing it influenced me to do was to get into Bad Religion and stop listening to the radio."
Ooh. We are going to incite some sort of you know, like UK based street brawl, like the Oasis folks and the non Oasis folks, they're gonna rumble.
It'll be like Gutter Cats and the Jets with Oasis and non Oasis Jets. I'm sorry, what was that, Tom Trauma?
I think Leatherface is going to have a small but devoted following, but I think you'd have a real hard time finding anyone admitting to ever liking Oasis at this point. So I think it would be a one-sided brawl. But I want to second him on the Leatherface thing. I love that band. I reviewed their box set of theirs earlier this year that had their first three records, and I never got to see them either, but they are – well, I shouldn't say never. You know, they – I'm not dead yet. Neither are all of them, but
that was quite morbid, Tom.
They're a cool band. They're a cool band, man. Frankie Stubbs, he's got one of those kind of sounds like he's sitting on the bowl trying to push one out singing voices that I sometimes enjoy.
Well, there you have it. High praise for Tom Trauma. This is from Thomas. I listened to the podcast today on the way to the Grand Canyon, and you should definitely pick up the Clash reissues from 2014. They're well packaged. And they sound great, and they're also mini vinyl replicas. So there you have it. We talked about how we had not heard the newest Clash reissues, and so I think I'm going to check them out. Just to reiterate, we weren't exactly clear last time. There are basically, CD-wise, there's three versions of the Clash records. There's the late 80s original issues, which sound pretty bad. There's the late 90s, 99 reissues, which sounds great. And then there's the brand new 2014 reissues, which are the first reissues mixed and remixed by Mick Jones. I haven't heard them yet, but Thomas says to check them out.
I hate buying the same records over and over again. I have all those, so I don't know.
Actually, I'm kind of dumb in that way. I actually sort of enjoy – well, I get annoyed when it's, there's not like a big difference, and I hate just buying the same record. But like if some of my records like have like a lot of extra material or something, I get really excited. Yeah. Like I get to hear like one of my favorite records for the first time again. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, if it's got a good studio bonus tracks, I can dig that.
Yeah. Or but also how about like the full – unreleased live concert mixed well. How about that?
Yeah, you know, I'll listen to that once or twice, but I generally not quite the same. But I can get into that. But I mean, I think we've had this discussion before. But I'm not a huge live album fan. I mean, there's a few of them over the years that I really love, but it's not really my thing.
You know what's weird is I've definitely gotten into bands just because they've been reissued. Like. I'll see like a reissue or even a deluxe version, and you can tell that whoever put it together like was really, really into the band and did a really nice job like with the reissue. And So I'm like, well, this person is that into this reissue? Let me check it out. Like if someone's willing to devote that much time and effort into reissuing this record, maybe it is a special record. Like Robert Fripp's Exposure is how I got into Robert Fripp that way. That's how I kind of got into Velvet Underground with those Velvet Underground double discs.
Oh, yeah. It gives us some credibility for some reason.
Yeah.
And there's certain labels that, you know, like Alternative Tentacles, I think we've kind of talked about. I mean, like any little punk band from West Virginia that they find, if they put out like a compilation, you know, album of, you know, it's going to be good.
Yes.
And there's also something appealing about like getting a band's whole discography in one chunk.
Yes.
As opposed to like buying one of their albums and saying, wow, this is really good. Now I have to go buy 8 more albums. But
Adam White, any closing comments?
The only thing is that having multiple copies of a record, I guess, is acceptable in some cases. But I'm the kind of person where if I do have two copies of the record, I get very itchy. Like I want to – like I feel like I need to do something with the lesser like of the
pick
copies.
Pick the best one and get rid of
it. Like one needs to win. As long as they have I don't have two versions that have slightly different stuff on them. Like if I have like, you know, like the UK and the US version of the first Clash record, whatever, those are different records, right? But like if I have, say, like, you know, the first shitty CD copy of London Calling, and then I have like deluxe reissue number 17 of London Calling that has like 45 discs with it, there's something about like the original one like still having it that I don't know. I need to do something about it. Right now, I'm turning around. I'm looking at my like record rack, and I own two copies of Combat Rock that are completely unremarkable and are identical. And I'll like wake up at like 3 a.m. and be like, "Fuck, you're one of those copies of Combat Rock." I don't know.
But then you look through the liner notes, and there'll be like one photograph that's different and in one and not in the other, and you're like, "I can't part with that. I can't get rid of that one."
Exactly.
I'm hoping that if these are identical, I can cannibalize them and combine them to make one not fucked up version of that record and one that's all beat up.
He's like making a collage and cutting up the
Right. I'll just take one apart and get some blue and like a jeweler's eyeglass and a pair of tweezers and like piece together the perfect one.
It will take a record expert to spot the fact that it's not an original, right?
See, Adam, you and I are actually sort of entirely different. Like Rolling Stones, David Bowie. I've got like multiple editions of a lot of those different CDs because they're different masters. Like with David Bowie, there's actually three unique actually now there's four or even five. But like a lot of my Bowie CDs, I've got like three versions of the same record because they're like, oh, I got to have the German remastered version. Oh, I got to have this remastered with the bonus tracks. Oh, I got to have this one with a different sound. So I'm kind of fanatical in the opposite way. That I do, if something is even the tiniest, most insignificantly different, but there is a perceptible difference, I want them both.
I guess, but like, what if the difference is that like one is just objectively worse?
You mean
like
it's a more beat up copy?
Well, not yeah. Well, I guess beat up, but no. But I mean, I'm thinking like in terms of like there's a lot of CDs that I ended up buying two copies of back in the CD era. Where do you remember like the first run of CDs that came out were all just kind of just shitty and unremarkable?
Yeah, they sound bad.
They were just repackaged cassettes, basically.
Yeah, like they sounded bad, or like they had like no liner notes at all. Like they didn't even try.
The back side said a compact disc is a compact music, or you know, yes, it like yeah, explained exactly what a compact disc.
Yeah,
was.
And it's like please excuse if this sounds terrible. They like put that on the CD.
But yeah, like I have every Led Zeppelin album on CD, the original ones from the you know late 80s, early 90s. I just can't bear to buy it because I never listened to them for one thing. But you know, I just couldn't bear to buy them all again.
The new remasters sound really good, Tom.
I'm sure. But I never listened to the ones I had. You know, it's just I just can't stand it.
So, John, is there anything else in the mailbag this week?
That's it. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Let us know if you want to give us money, and B, how you would like to give us money. Would you like to buy
Western
something?
Western Union.
And C, let us know, do you keep all your different mastered versions of your CDs or your records, or do you do the Adam White version, the racial superiority as seen through album version, and keep only the most fittest, most technologically superior version.
I would like to refer to that as Highlandering, not as racial superiority.
Only one just shall just remain. Yes.
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh, so John, I was talking about earlier when I was talking about how our podcast sucks, that I was driving home from Toronto. So I was driving home from Toronto this last Sunday because I saw Pill, John.
Nice.
I have to go see Pill.
Nice. Adam, that is awesome. Was it awesome, Adam? Was it like the best thing ever?
John, it was the best thing ever. It was really – no. And I'm totally serious that it was the best thing ever. And it was weird how it was the best thing ever for me. I always have these experiences where I'll be into a band that like no one I know in real life seems to give a shit about, only people on the internet. So when I'm actually in the rare situation where I am with other human beings that are into that same thing, it's always really surreal to me. So – you know, we talk about John Lydon a lot on this show, and we always talk about how, like, you know, in general, the punks don't like him. But, like, the modern-day internet punks don't like him, right? Like, people that have an opinion on the internet seem to have a problem with what he does. So he's never been – he's always been, like, a, you know, except for among the editors on Punk News, at least. He's been, like persona non grata as far as all that. So now I've always been a Pistols fan. I've always been a Lydon fan. And I went and seen and reviewed actually the 2003 reunion show that they did in Toronto on whatever run of reunions that was. They played with actually it was weird because it was a punk show with openers and stuff like that. Like they played with the Dropkick Murphys and the Reverend Horton Heat, and it was fine. Like my review is positive of it. I'm looking at it right now. It was enjoyable to see. The set kind of went off the rails in a fun way, and it was fun because it was eventful. But aside from being, you know, competent, it wasn't inspired. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't amazing. It was, you know, very novel to be able to go see John Lydon on stage. But you know, he was up there playing with, you know, with Glenn Matlock, and like, fuck, he didn't like Glenn Matlock ever. So you know, there's no chemistry there. There was nothing. Nothing amazing. It was very workmanlike. But this, John, this was nuts. you know, like 9 p.m. show on a Sunday night, no openers. You know, we're lining up outside of the Opera House, which is a venue down in a not super friendly area in Toronto. We go in there, you know, I wasn't quite sure about the vibe because there was I've been warned by Punk News Florida editor there, Adam Eisenberg, who had gone to one of the shows on this tour, that like there's a lot of old dudes. And I'm there. I'm like, yeah, there were lots of old dudes there. But you know what? I like shows where I'm with lots of old people. Like, A, it makes me personally feel young, which is great, because I'm getting to the point where I'll go see a band and like I am the old weird guy at the show. But in this case, I'm the young person again, which was cool. So I'm cool with all like the old Toronto punk guys that were there.
You should see if one of the guys would buy you a beer. Like, Mister, would you buy me a beer?
Yeah. but then just even outside of that, it was, you know, like I walked in and they're selling T-shirts, and they're selling T-shirts, John, for $40, right? Ugh. Now there might be some exchange stuff happening there, but it was very clear. Like I walked in, I looked at that, and my brain went, this is not the type of touring band that I usually go see. Like they're, you know, and people are just fucking buying these shirts, right? Like they're in a line, right? So like, and these were people that like own shirts that have like the tour dates on the back of the shirt kind of thing, right? One of those.
That's the worst, because you can only wear it for like a year and then it looks old.
Yeah, right. So it was that kind of crowd for the
unless you keep it for like 20 years,
then it's cool again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know. But you know what? I really like that venue. You can get, you know, there's like the stage isn't super high. You can get right up close to where things are going on. So I went and I bought a beer and I'm standing right up there. They come on, and John, it was magical. Like it was weird how much I enjoyed this. They started with Double Trouble off of the new record.
Did it kick ass, Adam? Did it kick ass?
It was super cool live. They played a handful of songs from that record. They played Betty Page. They played what was that new the latest single that we talked about on the show here? The one, the kind of softer song. But anyways, so I think they played Corporate. So they played they closed by playing oh God, what is that? What the World Needs Now song that's on What the World Needs Now, whatever. So they played a handful of songs on that record, but I wasn't quite sure what their set was going to be, only because you get certain older musicians that have a history of being sort of like a intractable iconoclast, and they'll go and they'll play shows, and they won't do the greatest hits thing. They will do whatever the fuck they want. Like Neil Young does that all the time, where people go to his shows and he'll play like 17 songs off his new record and then like, fuck you, and then he'll leave. So I didn't quite know what Johnny was going to do, but he, you know what? They did the greatest hits thing, which I really was great, because I've only ever consumed, you know, Pill, you know, on as recorded stuff. I've never seen them live. I've never had that chance. So they played the stuff that you would have expected them to play, but it was amazing that they did. So, you know, they used Public Image as an encore. They played Death Disco, of course. They played Rise off of 1986's album.
How was Rise? Was it like cool live?
Rise was cool live. Like actually a lot of those songs that were a little bit less harsh, a little bit more sing-songy, but really interesting live. Like they played The Body off of 1987's Happy. They played Warrior off of Nine. So they threw all these songs in, but the bass player that they have out with them, the guy that's currently in the band right now, is fucking amazing. And like the guy that his band is built out of right now, like these aren't like a bunch of like old punks necessarily that they have. Like these are like professional musicians. Like these are like
sellouts.
These are like musicians. Like these are session guys that he's playing with. But not in a bad way, like not in like, oh, we need to make a Britney Spears record, get some session guys in the room. Like these are guys where like if you are, you know, if you're a big name solo artist and you need like the fucking best bass player in the world, you get one of these guys. Right. So the players that he was playing with was amazing. But like the whole show was built around Scott Firth's bass. And, you know, he switched up a few times. I had this big, crazy, like nobody, stand-up bass that he was using for that they used for a bunch of stuff, but they it, like the whole show was like rhythmically based. to a degree that I like, I don't think even Pill on Record really will convey. Like the whole thing, the whole night was just like thumping, like the bass lines and everything that were going on. And I went and I looked up one of the videos that people had like shot with their cell phones during the show that was on YouTube kind of the night after. And I was thinking like, oh, I'm going to go show my wife like what was going on at this show where I was at. And then I was looking at it and I'm like, holy fuck, this doesn't work without the low end. And like, it really doesn't work without that. Like, it just being there and having the whole thing just like boom, boom, boom. It was just something else. Like, it was one of those shows where like the best recording of it wouldn't necessarily, convey the physical sense of like how that music was like actually like moving the molecules in your body as it was going on. So yeah, that was great. It was cool.
That is awesome.
They played Religion off of the first issue record, and it was like the rendition of it that they did felt like it was like 15 minutes long, and it was just him shrieking and being a maniac for that long. Like, it was cool. It was really cool. I'm way down the road now of becoming like a really annoying Pill fanatic. So this is one of my callings in life now. So yeah, if you have a chance to go see that tour, you should go see that tour because it's really good. I know that they were on Colbert on Tuesday night. And the video from that's pretty cool, but man, like go see that current version of Pill Live, because like it's just, they're just really good. So yeah.
That's awesome.
Tom, you were also similarly blown away.
Well, you know, if you really like being the creepy old guy at the show, Adam, you should try going to see All Time Low and Sleeping with Sirens. I was having these flashbacks to it. Remember, like in the mid '90s, I remember like when I first started going to Warped Tour in the mid '90s, when I was a youngster in my early 20s. They had these like parent rooms where you could like drop your kids off and sit in the parent room and, you know, read magazines.
No
scenes or whatever you would do, like it was a waiting room for a doc's office, and they used to have that arena shows and like the Warped Tour, and all I could think was, my God, I should be that parent sitting in the, I should be in the parent room now. But it was definitely an interesting experience. T-shirts were only $30 at this one, but yeah, I went with my daughter and her friend, and it was pretty interesting. And it's like one of the, you know, I wrote a long review of it. Because when you badmouth something, you have to like put a lot more effort into it than if you're praising something. And it really, writing that review is the great paradox of this job that I know you two both understand even better than I do, which is you spend all week toiling, like trying to promote this band that you think is really cool and trying to turn people onto it, and no one gives a shit. And then you like write a fluff piece about some crappy pop band, and I'm getting more comments than I do on anything else I write. So anyway, I guess I need to spend $32 more often to go see Mall Screamo or something.
Did you learn anything from it, Tom? Was there any takeaway? What insight did you have to the youth of today seeing them at that concert?
Well, my takeaway from it is
– Wait, Tom, did you tell people you went with your daughter? I don't want people to think you went by yourself.
No, I did. I went with my daughter and her friend. And my daughter, All Time Low, is like her favorite band. And well, no, the thing I took away from it was my first musical love was like hair metal, like Def Leppard, Rat, shit like that. I mean, that was like my, you know, that was my era. And it was just, I look back and I kind of can enjoy it because that was the music I grew up with. But I realized that it was just like shit, no substance music. But it was just like, it was like junk food, you know, it tastes good, but it had no nutrition. And that's what I said in the review. And that's the same way this music is. But it when my daughter talks about pop punk or whatever, it does sort of make me cringe having, you know, survived like the golden era of pop punk in the early 90s. I just wanted to go listen to some Screeching Weasel, but she's not really interested. But it was okay. The things we do for our kids, right?
Well, there you have it. Tom Trauma. Given the
I made her pay for her own t-shirt.
Well, they have, we'll tell you what, we talked about one of the most modern quote punk rock bands. People, let's talk about one of the pre-punkers, the proto-punkers. Burger Records is about to re-release the Berlin Brats. Say, John, who's the Berlin Brats? The answer is the Berlin Brats was the proto-punk band. This is like 1973. that featured Rick Wilder of the Mau Maus. Mau Maus were an early LA punk band, not super well known, but pretty important. And the Mau Maus definitely influenced pretty much every early West Coast punker there is, from Black Flag to Germs to Bad. All those guys are influenced by the Mau Maus. Well, before he was in the Mau Maus, he was in a band called the Berlin Brats. Burger Records is about to re-release the entire Berlin Brats recordings. It's only like 12 songs, and 6 of them are live. But let me tell you, man, I definitely say that the Ramones were the first punk band in the U.S. and that Sex Pistols were first punk band in the U.K. People say like Stooges or New York Dolls. I definitely consider them proto-punk. However, much like the Stooges and much like the New York Dolls, the Berlin Brats showed that the concept of the beginning of punk isn't nearly as clean cut as we like to paint it out to be. That being said, I definitely think the Ramones were the first punk band. But that being said, this is an awesome proto-punk band, the Berlin Brats. This is Tropically Hot by the Berlin Brats, out soon on Burger Records. Check it out. We are back, and that was the Berlin Brats featuring Rick Wilder. Let's talk about a new punk band doing something that I don't even know. This band really upset a lot of people, and I thought this was great and amusing and fun, but this like pissed people off. One of my favorite modern punk bands, and I think one of the greatest modern punk, like brand new, well, they're not brand new anymore, they've been around for like 3 years, but one of my very favorite newest punk bands, Crazy and the Brains. They released a cover of Drake's. Adam and Tom, you guys know who Drake is, right?
I've heard of him.
Adam, you know who Drake is?
Drake's on our money.
He's like a rapper, right?
Oh, yeah, you know who Drake is because he's Canadian. All Canadians are like bound by law to know who Drake is.
There's like Russ, Lightfoot, and Drake.
Yeah. Well, hell, it's like, you know, you flip over a Canadian $20 bill and there's Drake on the one side.
Like, people were saying, like, I don't know who Drake is. Like, I kind of thought, like, everybody knew who Drake – like, not that you're a fan, but, like, everybody knows who Madonna is, Britney Spears. I kind of thought – or Jay-Z or Kanye.
Is Drake that big?
Drake's pretty big right now, Tom. And he's been pretty big for about two years now.
I'm glad I don't listen to the radio.
Anyways, so Drake released this video for this video called Hotline Bling, and everyone was making fun of it because he, like, dances really bad in it. I don't think he did. I mean, honestly, I cannot dance as good as Drake. Even but people are like, oh, look how terrible Drake is at dancing. I'm like, well, that's better than I can do. Anyways, so Crazy in the Brains released their own version of Drake's current number one hit. It was number one with a bullet, Hotline Bling. But what was interesting is Crazy in the Brains did kind of like this weird samba version. And I thought this was amusing and funny and just kind of a fun I don't think this was any serious artistic statement. I think they just thought it would be funny if they took a Drake song and did like a weird garage punk samba version. But the kids hated – the kids like hated this. Like one person even said that I had some conspiracy where I hired the band to record this just to piss off the commenters. Tom Trauma, as someone who doesn't know much about Drake, what did you think of this track? Did you find it amusing?
I did hear the Drake song once, but it was on like a Saturday Night Live parody or something. You know, I'm not necessarily sold on Crazy in the Brains. They certainly,
oh, really?
They're not terrible. It's not like I hate them, but they're a little bit of a novelty thing for me because they always have the – was it the xylophone? Or
they got a xylophone in the band, yeah.
Like I could handle it if it was, you know, popped up random once in a while, but I don't think I could listen to a half hour album of that. I mean, I know they're one of your favorites, John. Like I said, I don't hate them necessarily. It's just not, somebody's got to be the orthodox guy. I'm starting to embrace my role as the curmudgeon, as you see from my all time low sleeping with sirens review. You know, I just argued with a bunch of teenage kids on alternative press about whether or not Punk Goes Christmas had any punk bands on it at all, which it did, by the way. But anyway, so
Well, I mean, you don't have to. We certainly don't have to agree, and I think we disagree on punk news on the Punk News podcast is one of its virtues, really. If I will just defend Crazy in the Brains from my perspective, is I enjoy the xylophone. I think if you listen to a whole album of it, the xylophone actually you would think it would become a novelty or annoying, but I find that the xylophone in Crazy in the Brains doesn't make it like you don't fixate on the xylophone at all, but rather it just gives the band a unique sound that no other band really has. I do not get tired of the xylophone because I think it blends in well with the tune. Adam White with the rebuttal.
John, I appreciate that Crazy in the Brains is sort of like a weird and wacky punk band that's out there doing something that doesn't.
Amusing?
Hold on. I appreciate that they get out there and they do other crazy things. And they do stuff like
Adam, I believe you took John's side in the Danzig debate. It's about time.
Yeah, so hold on. I'm cool with that, and I'm cool with them doing a weird thing like this because it's weird and provocative. Like I'm in, but like I don't really want to listen to it in that. Like I didn't want to really listen to the Drake song in the first place, and this isn't so. It's like not such an aggressive remix of what's going on in the Drake song. It's just
it doesn't
sort of
sound like Drake at all.
It does, but it's the same. They haven't like
it's the same words,
up melody, or anything like that. It's the same song. It's just them doing it, right?
It's a samba.
But I am convinced that you took a certain amount of relish in posting this because you knew you knew that your detractors would have like a fucking canary.
Honestly, Adam, I swear to God, I didn't. My most controversial articles, I'm such an idiot. This has happened to me at least 10 times. I'm like, everyone's going to love this. This is going to be great. And then like the first time that really happened was when I interviewed all five members of Flag, and I wrote like a 10,000 word interview with Flag. And the night before, I'm like, I'm going to become the most famous guy on the internet. No one's ever interviewed all five Black Flag members at once in one article and had them talking about each other. This is going to be the greatest thing ever. I'm on my way. And then I posted it, and it was just like 60 comments of hate, you know. And
I love that piece, John. I got your back on that. Well,
thank you, Tom.
Piece.
I am very proud of that piece. I mean, that piece is excellent. Not to compliment myself, but thank you, Tom. But it got almost all hate, and I swear with this, I'm like. Like, for all my most controversial articles. I'm like, the night before, I'm like, people are going to love this. This is so cool. This is so clever. And then the next morning, it's like, this is stupid. I hate you. You're trying to make punk news bad. Why are you trying to prank us? I swear I was not trying to prank anybody. I genuinely thought this was an amusing, clever, fun little thing. And no one agrees with me. I feel so alone. I feel so alone.
John, I feel that you could post an article that is kind of like the first 20 people that email john@punknews.org are going to get, you know, $50 in the mail, and people will be like, fuck you, John. There's you can't win for losing. So I don't know.
There was absolutely I have done once in a while. I'll do like an article just to like rank. Well, not I've never, ever posted an article to rank all people, though I have posted articles to say I think this is a genuinely good article and I know it will piss people off, but I don't care because I'm right and they're wrong in posting this article. Like when I do like my extended Dwarves interviews or whatever, I think Dwarves are great, but I know that's going to piss people off, but they can't tell me what to do, if you will. But the intent of posting a Dwarves interview is not to piss people off. It's because I think a Dwarves interview has merit.
But I like that people would accuse you of, like, inventing the Dwarves somehow. John, where'd you come up with Red? Like, the Dwarves are a legit band. Like, they exist. It's like they're worth talking about. People would still give you shit for that.
Anyway, I think his video is great. I think everyone check it out and make your own decision. That's all I can say. And I just don't know why no one agrees with me. I think this is wonderful. I'm so alone. No one understands me. Go leave me alone, Mom.
Well, John, I don't know if this is going to make you feel any better, but Ween has announced some reunion concerts. Another quirky band. Yeah. So the reunion shows, they're going to take place on February 12th and 13th of the next year, which would be 2016, at the First Bank Center in Bloomfield, Colorado. So that's really all that's come out about this. No, there's no real word about the extent of the reunion or anything like that. But Ween, John, like, I feel like we've talked about Ween before, and I don't really remember what the context was, but you're a Ween guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I actually just became a Ween guy like 2 years ago. I saw Ween on one of their last shows at Asbury Park, and I hated it. I thought it was so boring and hippy-dippy. It's because I didn't understand. I mean, Ween can be a little too hippy-dippy sometimes. I like their more energetic stuff. But Ween, if you haven't checked out Ween, and Ween is kind of a hard band to get into because like with a lot of their songs, you're not sure if they're being serious or trying to be funny or just trying to be weird. Ween is a super clever, super weird band. If you haven't checked them out, check out Chocolate and Cheese or check out The Mollusk. The Mollusk is kind of more trippy, Pink Floydian, whereas Chocolate and Cheese is more of a rock, funny, weird album. It's more of a Frank Zappa type album, Chocolate and Cheese. The reason why this is very interesting is because Ween broke up, like, what, 2 years ago or something? And the breakup seemed to be extremely hostile to it. There's two main Ween guys, Gene Ween and Dean Ween. And they had been together for, like, 30 years or 25 years. And they're actually from New Hope, which is kind of near Philadelphia. But what happens is the reason Ween broke up was because Gene Ween was doing too many drugs, and it seemed like he was in a pretty low point in his personal life. So he kind of – and I don't know this is a fact, but this is what I've drawn from interviews on both sides, is he had to leave the band to basically get his life back in order and to get off drugs and stuff. And Dean Ween was like mad because Gene Ween wanted the party to end. But also, it seemed as though Gene Ween was a little passive-aggressive because in his first solo album, Freeman, the first three tracks are pretty much implicitly dissing Ween and Dean Ween specifically. Like the refrain to the first song is, fuck you, I'm moving on, which is pretty harsh, you know? And so it seemed as though things were pretty bad between the two, and it seemed like they weren't talking. And they actually both kind of like went on with their own projects. Dean Ween formed the Dean Ween solo group, which is literally just Ween without Gene Ween. But however, the Dean Ween group is much more of a rock band than Ween was. Ween's kind of a trippy, psychedelic sort of band. Meanwhile, Gene Ween put out the Freeman album, and he did a whole tour of doing all Billy Joel covers, and it was awesome. And it seemed as though Ween was over with. However, listen. The police are calling me. Listen to this, guys. Hold on. The police are calling me. Hello? This is, yes. The only reason I was calling is is outside of my house a little while ago. There was a two cars. I think it was some kids, and they were yelling the N-word at people as they were walking by and stuff. And then they sped off down the street at like 50 or 60 miles an hour. And I was concerned because there's lots of little kids that live around here, so I didn't want anybody to get run over. But that was like 3 hours ago or something. So, well, no, it was dark. So, and they sped away like 60 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour. All right. Well, thanks very much. All right. Thanks. Bye bye. Could you guys hear that? Wow.
Speaking of surreal psychedelic moments, yeah, that is like the weirdest thing I think I've ever heard on this.
You guys want to hear this crazy story? I mean, this is story's insane. Do you guys want to hear this?
Hey.
Or you don't care? Adam White?
No. Go ahead. You're going to be the voice of reason and try to keep us on track.
I cannot stand the police. Here's why. I walk out to go exercising outside of my house today at about 7:30 or 8, and there's two cars of, I think they were kids, but I'm not sure. And they're yelling, "Hey N-word, hey N-word." And I thought they were like yelling at each other, but as I kept walking, I'm like they're yelling at me. Now, I mean, I consider myself a pretty tough guy, but you know what? I'm like, you know what? 8-1, those are not good odds, and who knows what they got in the car. You know what I mean? So I kind of like walk behind the house, and then one of them like sped off down the street at 70 miles an hour, and then the other one was kind of like driving slowly, like yelling at me, "Hey, N-word, hey, N-word," and I'm not black, mind you. And then they sped off like at 70 miles an hour down the road. So I'm like, you know, I better call the police. Well, the police have pulled me over 15 times in the past 7 years, and I've gotten zero tickets. So I've got a grudge against the police. But I'm like, listen, let them give those guys a ticket for once, you know. So I call, I Google the police number, and then I call it up, and there's this loud beeping, and it's like BWG Communications. I'm like, oh, I must have dialed the wrong number. Sorry. So then I look up the police number on the police website, and I call up the number. And then it's like that loud noise, and it's like, this is BWG Communications. And I'm like, is this the police? And they're like, well, we're the dispatcher. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, I'm trying to talk to the police. They're like, well, what's the problem? And I'm like, well, listen. And I tell essentially what I just told you guys. And they're like, well, what kind of cars were they? I'm like, I guess they were like Honda Civics. They're like, well, what kind? I'm like, I don't know. Aftermarket modified Honda Civics. It was dark. They were driving 70 miles an hour. I don't know. You know? And then they were like, and then he was like, well, who was in the car? I'm like, I don't know. You know, it's like eight people call me the N-word. I don't know. He's like interrogating me when I'm trying to prevent crime, you know. And so he's like, well, where do you live? And I tell him where I live. We'll have to go back and bleep something out of the podcast. And he's like, oh, well, that's not our jurisdiction. That's this borough. I'm like, all right. You know, and me, I'm like, but my address is your police department, like that same city. He's like, I know, but you're in a different borough. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, you know, I'm like, don't even worry about it. I don't care. You know, I'm like, and he's like, well, I'll have an officer call you. You know, and he's like pissed off, and I called the dispatcher. And so then my phone rings. I answer it, and then so this happens. 45 minutes later, my phone rings and I answer it. Like, good thing it wasn't a stick up. You know, I would have been dead. And so,
they have a different number for that, you know, John.
I didn't want to call 911 because it wasn't an actual emergency.
I know. I hear you. I get you.
So I answer the phone, and it's like an automated message. It's like officer something something was trying to reach you. And then my phone got a message for some reason. So I listened to the message, and it's like it's all garbled. I can't really hear. It's like, this is officer. Call this number. So I call up the number. So there's a loud blaring in my ear. It's like BWG Communications. And I'm like, I'm just trying to call the cop that just called me, you know? And they're like, well, what's the problem? I'm like, you called me? And they're like, well, what's the problem? And so I tell them the whole thing again. And they're like, well, when did the officer call you? I'm like, 30 seconds ago, but he didn't even call me. It was like a message, you know? And they're like, well, you're calling the wrong borough. I'm like, you called me, you know? And they're like, well, we'll have somebody call you. And then 3 hours later or 2 hours later, I just got this call from the cops. Adam, do you have these kind of problems with the police in Canada? I'm not a fan of the police.
I'm trying to even think of the time where I have needed to call the police, and I that, you know, it's sort of it's a utopia here, John. Like, I don't live in like fucking Mad Max like you do. Like,
I don't either. I live in a very peaceful neighborhood. It's just a bunch of kids being assholes. And I mean, honestly, like, I called under the guise of wanting to protect kids, but I really just wanted them to get a ticket because they were being assholes, you know. But yeah, good job, police. You called me 3 hours later to ticket somebody that sped off. Oh my God, I'm not. I want to be a fan of the police, but I'm not. Anyways, Ween. Let's talk about Ween. This
might Every be Breath You Take was all right.
Let's wrap up Ween. No one expected Ween to get back together because it seemed like they hated each other. All of a sudden, they're back together. Is it because of the money? Maybe. We'll see what happens. You should check out Ween.
You think it's because of the money? Is there like a is there a big pot of Ween money, Adam, that's out there?
Surprisingly, there is. Ween will like headline like Bonnaroo. Like, Ween plays the same audiences that Tom Petty plays. Ween is huge, and no one realizes it.
Festival audience is weird, though, because, yeah, 50,000 people will go watch Motorhead play at a festival, but if they're playing a hall, they'll only get 2,000, you know? But
that's how Ween does, though.
But here's the thing. That's the only way they have to make a living, Adam, I suspect. You know, that's how they've made their living, made their bones. And the Gene Ween group, you know, is probably a poor substitute for going to see Ween, or the Dean Ween group, whichever one it was. This is another one of those bands that I kind of want to make a concerted effort to check out, but I don't really.
Check out Chocolate and Cheese or The Mollusk. That's where you start.
All right. I'll try to remember that. All worked up.
I am all worked up. I'm trying to protect lives.
You're like calling it. It's like, if you're being robbed, press 1.
Yeah.
You're being raped, press 2.
I'm trying to protect lives of 5-year-olds that are wandering out into the street, and the cop is interrogating me like I'm committing a crime. And they call me 3 hours later.
Protect and serve, John. That's what they do.
I have this picture of you leaving your house to go exercise or whatever you said, and you're wearing like a fuzzy 1980s headband, and you know, like aerobics gear from
No, no, he's embracing his inner Paisan. He's got like a big gold medallion, like the full sweatsuit with the stripes down the
Honestly,
sleeve.
Honestly, guys, I do wear tracksuits when I work out.
Yeah.
Like a yellow Bruce Lee tracksuit.
It's a blue. Not that the Bungie's listeners care. It's blue with like stripes on the legs and stripes on the arms. I don't wear the top when I'm actually working out, but I do wear the pants when I'm actually working out. But it was so like they're like hey N word, and I'm clearly not that it would be okay to say that if I was black, but I'm not even black.
Oh, come on, John. That's how all the kids greet themselves now. They were probably trying to be friendly. They were probably trying to sell some drugs.
It was weird, man. I don't know, man. It was weird.
John, tell us about Dez Kadena.
I'm so upset. I'm upset. Well, listen, as the listeners might, this podcast is going off the rails, but that's all right. That happens once in a while. You know, what can you say? Listen.
The fucking cops, John. That's the problem.
Well, I want to like the police, but I have had, like, not this episode, but sometime remind me to tell you the bicycle story when I was on my bicycle, when I got pulled over on my bicycle by the cops. On my bicycle. We'll do that one later.
What kind of pants were you wearing? Oh, sorry. Okay.
All right, yes. Listen, so Dez Kadena had cancer. He might still have cancer. I think he doesn't, but he's recovering. Well, a bunch of his friends are going to throw two benefit shows out in L.A. on November 21st and November 22nd. What's going to be really interesting, well, a lot of the old school West Coast punkers are going to be there. Alley Cats, which is one of the first wave LA punk rock bands, going to be there. Mike Watt's going to be there. Grant Hart of Husker Du is going to be there. Keith Morris is going to do like a spoken word set or something like that. Rick Agnew is going to be there. Paul Rosler of the Screamers, Paul Rosler of Twisted Roots is going to be there. Perhaps most interestingly is the Tourists are going to be there. You say, John, who's the Tourists? The Tourists is Red Cross before they were Red Cross, including Greg Hetson on guitar. So this is pre-Circle Jerks, pre-Red Cross. So it'll be a super interesting, super neat set. And I just think if you live in LA, this is a show that you should go to. Like this is like a once in a lifetime show. It probably will be an amazing show. Of course, by the time you hear this, it'll probably have already happened. So. Saccharine Trust is going to be there. Carnage
cool,
Asada.
Underrated, kind of unknown band. I would definitely go. That's a good old man punk rock show for me. But it's too far away.
That's a cool lineup. All right.
It is.
Play us a song.
Speaking of,
so we can.
Okay, I'm gonna play. I'm gonna play an anti-authority song. I'm gonna play a band from Saginaw, Michigan, called the Toss Pints. They kind of do like they kind of do the Celt punk thing, but they do it so well it kind of transcends that. And they put out a new record this year that I really love. It's called The Privateer. And this song is called We Are the Many. And it's on East Grand Record Company, one of my favorite labels here in Michigan. So anyway, this is the Toss Pints. We Are the Many.
Toss Pites doing We Are the Many. Speaking of We Are the Many, let's talk about the few. That is the few streaming services left. Radio, or RDO, I guess it's RDO, has filed for bankruptcy. As part of the bankruptcy filing, it looks like Pandora is going to acquire basically most of RDO's intellectual property, basically just the programs. The price paid? $75 million. What that means is Pandora has plans to launch a new product that may or may not be similar to RDO next year with that $75 million purchase. I know Adam White's a big streaming fan. We're not going to get into the physical versus streaming argument again because we've had that argument like five times in the past 5 weeks. But Adam White, I mean, what does it say to you that streaming devices – well, A, I mean, what does it say to you? But also, what does it say that – they can afford to pay $75 million for assets, but bands are still only getting like 4 cents.
You know, I when this all broke and I got very jokingly snarky about it on the internet. But my enlightened comment, at least the one that I thought was the enlightened comment here, was just that, like, I am so incensed that my personally preferred artist predatory streaming service is the one that's gone out of business, and now I have to choose some other artist predatory streaming service to use. I don't know how any of these internet companies, and I say this as a person that works with internet companies all day, I don't know how any of them actually expect to stay in business for the long term. It's all speculation. It's all venture money that's making any of these things exist. Like, none of these companies, for the most part, like have a solid, reliable, repeatable business model that doesn't rely on like someone giving them, round C of, venture funding or whatever at this point or that. Like, these companies just burn through other people's money until at some point the investors, come calling and say, like, wait a minute, like, there's a return, right? And then they just laugh and then go up in a puff of smoke. So that's what's happened here. Here's why I am sad about RDO's demise. And it's only because, as far as the online music services go, at least the ones that I've used, they were the one that was the most pleasant to use. Like, if you were a subscriber and you weren't being advertised to or anything for it, A, they were super cheap. So again, this probably isn't very artist friendly, but as a consumer, like, the web version of RDO cost like $5 or $6 a month. Their catalog size was as big as, Spotify or Apple's or anything like that. But their app, the thing that you used, was exactly what you would want when using a music app, in that it just got the fuck out of the way. You would search for a band or a release or something like that, and their app was just white, and then it would pull up the cover art of the things. And then if you played one, it would show you the cover art and play the fucking songs. And there was no – it wasn't trying to be clever. It wasn't over-designed. I mean, so the – what I've done now that I can't use this thing anymore, or at least at some point it's going away. So right now I'm using Apple Music again to kind of scratch this itch that I have. And like, Apple Music to me was – it was the inevitable – choice. Like, at some point I'll probably end up using this thing, and it's only because, like, from a practical standpoint, I'm one of these guys that has a lot of Apple devices. Like, I have an Apple TV, I have an iPhone, I have a MacBook Pro. So if I'm going to be on one of my things, chances are, if I'm using the Apple Music service, it's all going to play nicely together, and the music library that I have sitting on my computer is going to be the same one that's on the TV and all that shit, right? So, like, it makes sense that, like, that is eventually the one that I was going to end up using. But Apple TV in its current state, or at least Apple TV in its state upon launch, or not Apple TV, sorry, Apple Music in its state upon launch, was just a fucking mess. Like, they launched it before it needed to launch. And especially when you compare it to RDO, where, as I was just saying, where RDO was just designed cleanly. Like, it works. You search for a record, there's the record, you play it. Apple Music is still full of all sorts of bananas, weird little user interface things that I guess aren't super interesting as far as this podcast goes, but just, you search for something and it pulls up a list of records. And sometimes when it pulls up the list of records, you can click on one to add it to your library. But sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes it plays the record. Sometimes a little thing you need to click on to make it add to your library isn't there, but maybe it is. Like, it's like Apple Music feels like it needed to have like another like 6 months in the oven before it would be like ready for public consumption. But you know what? I don't control the way money works and these companies work. So that's what I'm using right now, is I've kind of swapped over to that. I know a lot of people are Spotify fans, and that's nice. There's something about Spotify that I don't know, that for some reason, like, I feel that I've heard so many like horrible Spotify royalties stories out there, that there's something about it where, like, I don't feel that I trust them. Not even trust. Like, I don't feel like I want to use them. And I don't know if RDO probably wasn't paying any more than Spotify ever was. But there's just something about Spotify that has been soured in my mind, that, like, if I have to switch from RDO and use another one of these things, well, then I guess I'll just use Apple's. But But yeah, I don't know. So I guess a lot of people are going to go use Spotify now and do this kind of thing. I really don't want to revisit the streaming versus vinyl thing that we do on the show every 20 minutes because, like, I'm on both sides on that, as I've said 50 times. But anyways, I don't know. RDO was nice to use, and it is now not. So,
can you guys hear that? Can you guys hear that? Can you hear that?
Are you loading your Glock?
No, that's my cassette. That's my CD that still works just fine. It didn't. My CD did not file for bankruptcy. It still works pretty good.
Adam, you're the only person I've ever heard talk about this RDO. Is it a Canadian thing, or am I just that out of it?
No. It's partly their problem is I don't think they marketed themselves very well, but they were among the first of these kind of streaming services to show up.
But that's the way, some people like the control. You know, if you like the controls of it, I know. I feel your pain, man. You find one you really like, and then somebody screws it up.
Someone said that, like, there was someone that tweeted that, like, all the people that are celebrating the fact that, like, Spotify has won over RDO are the kind of people that would celebrate over, like, VHS winning over Beta. Where, like, you know, when it really comes down to it, Beta was a better product. It was designed better. It was more robust. It was, you know.
Betamax was better in every way. It was smaller and a higher quality. It
didn't catch on, right? Yeah. It's that sort of thing is what people are saying. I don't know if that's quite true because, you know, that you still have the problem underlying a lot of these internet companies that, like, they don't make any fucking real money. They're just taking people's money. And, like, Spotify to me is sort of in the same category. Like, I would consider them to be on pretty thin ice, you know.
Does Bandcamp make money?
I would imagine Bandcamp probably makes money because, like, Bandcamp – sells stuff, right? Like,
they get a slight cut of everything that is sold. Bandcamp gets, I mean, it's a small percentage. It's pretty artist friendly.
I love Bandcamp, man.
Yeah,
I do too.
Bandcamp. And the reason that I think something like Bandcamp will survive is because, like, I'm sure that they've gotten some investment money to get started. Like, I'm not absolving them of that criticism, but they have a business model. They seem to, you know, it seems to be pretty apparent to you as the consumer how that company makes money. They sell songs, so they must take a cut of them. Like, okay. I think that with any of these internet companies, whenever you look at them and you go, okay, it's pretty clear to me how they make money, then chances are, as long as the company doesn't try to do something crazy and their eyes don't get way bigger than their stomach, then they could survive. So, like, Bandcamp, at this point in my mind, by all means, could survive. Something like RDO, where, like, I had, like, access to 30,000 songs and I was paying like $4.99 a month. Like, meh, I don't know about that. But that's a little bit more iffy. But even something like fucking, like, Snapchat, like, how does Snapchat make money? Like that thing's gonna crash.
Didn't somebody buy it for like billions of dollars? I don't know.
What amazes me about Snapchat is it's something that already existed, but it's just a crappier version. Like, you could already send videos to your friends, but Snapchat says you can send an 8-second video to your friend.
Yeah, so I mean, I've got to imagine that one of the safer bets on this thing. And this is where my personal tech bias is going to come in here. And this is super interesting from a punk rock perspective, by the way. But like Apple, at least in my mind, like it's pretty clear how Apple makes money is they sell things. Like, you can go buy physical trinkets that Apple makes. They're called computers and stuff, right? So people buy those, and that's how they make their money. So Apple Music is something like that doesn't necessarily have to, like, sustain itself to the same degree that something like RDO would, like, completely on the merits of the service. So, you know, that's maybe a little bit of a safer animal. That, and Apple has always sort of had as part of their brand that they are, you know, artists use Macs, music people use Macs, right? That's a thing that they've always kind of, like, played with. So it's a little bit more core to their brand. At the same point that, like, that's why, you know, I look at, say, like, Google's service, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, that doesn't really seem like as core to Google's culture as having, like, a great music service in the long term. So, I don't know. I'm by no means advocating that, like, all these things fail and that there's, like, one that rules them all. I'm just saying that's where my biases come in on this. So anyways, RDO is dead. It's kind of crappy if you were using RDO like me. Apparently not a lot of you were.
Adam, just to round off this conversation, you said there's not necessarily one to rule them all, but I would disagree. By destroying RDO, Pandora acquired its powers for $75 million. here we are.
So he feels different about his streaming services than he does his record collection, apparently. There doesn't necessarily need to be just one.
Did you guys get my Highlander reference there?
I did. Okay, I was riffing on it, John.
So, yeah, that's two for two, I guess. So, anyways, RDO's gone. That's kind of crappy if you're Adam and you want to listen to music in your office. So, let's talk about just a couple other things that are really cool that happened this past week. So, the first, and this is the band I talk about in the show all the time, but we finally have some details here. So, the Dirty Nil have unveiled the details on their debut full length, which is going to be called Higher Power. It's coming out on February 26th on Dynalone Records here in Canada. I assume Dynalone Records worldwide, but you know, who knows? It's got 11 songs on it. Some of the songs are, and this is very interesting for me because I've been following this band as they've been putting out, you know, singles and EPs and like little releases, and they've been doing that for like 2 or 3 years now. So to actually see how they're going to put together a full length, it's kind of a mix of the two, and I'm really curious to see if this stuff is re-recorded or anything like that. So there's 3 or 4 songs on here that are, you know, ones that I have heard and own on, you know, this or that 7-inch from 2013 or something like that. But the rest of them are new things. So cover art, the full track listing, all that stuff is over on Punk News right now. And there is a video that they have put up for the song No Weaknesses, which was the A-side of the first 7-inch that they released on Dynalone as part of that relationship. That came out in September, and it's going to be the lead track from this new record. So anyways, there is a No Weaknesses video that you can go check out on Punk News right now. And now details on this record. So here you go. The Dirty Nil actually going to have a full length. So I'm stoked. There's a part of this whole story that drives me sort of squirrely, but I don't know if it's worth getting into.
Let's do it, man. We're already off the rails. Just mention it.
This show's gonna be like 4 hours long. All right.
So what? We talked to the cops. I felt alone.
I suppose. So all right. Prefacing this, I love this band. I've loved everything they've done. I played them on this own show like 15 times. So you know, no. Casting no shade on them or anything like that. But the way all this got announced was weird to me. And it was weird for a reason where I can't figure out who I'm exactly blaming here. Where it's either like their PR people did something weird. But I know their PR people and I don't think they did anything weird. Or Dan Ozzie over at Noisy by Vice did something weird. And that's a pretty likely thing because he does stuff sometimes that I disagree with. Or it's Dynalone did this in a weird way, which is also possible because Dynalone is kind of a weird fit of a label for them outside of geography. But this all got announced in this article that Noisy ran called "The Dirty Nil is Not a Punk Band." And my problem with that is that if you read that interview, to me, doesn't really seem like that is the band's message. Like that's what they were trying to lead with on announcing this record. It's entirely like Ozzy's line of questioning that gets them to that point. And then that becomes the headline for the article. And then that becomes the headline that gets shared off onto all their social and then picked up and shared all over the place. And it was weird to me. So there's this line of questioning in there, which is kind of like, so Dirty Nil, you guys are awesome, which, you know, is entirely Dan's, you know, good call on him for saying that. Right. But he comes in, he's like, hey, Dirty Nil, you guys had a 7-inch on Fat. How'd that happen? And, you know, they explain how that happened. He's like, oh, were you guys big NoFX fans? And their answer is like legitimately no. Like we were classic rock fans. These guys are probably listening to music with Tom Trauma. Right. So, you know, they were listening to that kind of stuff as kids. And then it kind of like went from there down this like, oh, no, we're not really NoFX fans. Oh, no, really, really, we don't know a lot about NoFX. Oh, really, let's start talking about punk. Oh, really, is the Dirty Nil a punk band? And they're like, well, no, we're not really a punk band. But their answer to that was in a way the same way that like a lot of bands that I think are like nominally playing punk music will say they're not a punk band, which is usually what that means is that like we don't really want to deal with the bullshit. So, you know, we're a rock and roll band. And like that was a totally valid answer because there's lots of bullshit in punk rock and lots of bands will say that kind of thing all the time. I think most punk bands, if you went and you asked them, hey, are you guys a punk band? They'll probably be like, no, because we don't want to have a conversation about punk because fuck, that's that, you know, is that old? Like, not like, is that a conversation we don't want to bother having right now?
We don't want to have to stand trial before the credibility police.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like to the point where, like, I'm thinking, like, if I was in a band and it was like a punk band, I'd probably be like, no, I'm not a punk band. Fuck you. Leave me alone. Right. Which is sort of like a very punk rock thing to say. But the questioning sort of comes down to that, where if all of a sudden you're being interviewed by Vice and then they ask you, are you a punk band? And you're like, this is you as like a little Ontario band, like going and making your name on the scene with like the big, you know, New York based music site or whatever. You know, there's a consequence if all of a sudden you come out and be like, yeah, we're punk rock, because then all of a sudden, okay, yeah, your punk rock means to a lot of people, like, put us on tour with the Casualties, and that might not be what they're going for. So, like, their answer to this, you guys a punk band question, is totally legit. It's just, it's weird to me that became the thesis statement for the article. And then that article became the announcement article for like both of this music video and for the new records details. And then it gets shared everywhere. And I'm like, that's such a weird narrative to take. And I got to imagine that, like, if I'm in the band and I'm like looking all over my social and seeing how I'm being mentioned everywhere, it's like we explicitly brought up that, like, no, we're not really considering ourselves a punk band, but all this stuff about us is kind of about punk rock now because that became the headline. Like, that's so fucking weird to me. Like, I can't imagine that, like, that's what they wanted.
It's probably a poorly researched interview, you know, so you don't have your guns going off. And Vice does that a lot. I mean, I'm not interested in battling with anybody right now. I've got enough battle on my hands. But what I'm saying is, no. Well, first of all, Adam, you're entirely right. But also, you know, Vice does like some. Vice will do like dismissive interviews just because they think it's quirky, and maybe it's kind of funny for a minute, but it doesn't really do anybody a service in the long run, and everything. I mean, and everything ends up looking hollow, you know. And that's what this is. It's poorly researched, an attempt to be quirky or funny or weird, and it's just kind of pointless.
Yeah, like I'm trying. I don't want to shit on Dan over there, even though I know that, like, I don't think we personally have had our differences, but, like, you know, publication wise we've definitely had our differences over the years, but, you know, I mean, like, dude talks about a lot of bands that I really like, and, like, I want to give him a lot of credit for, like, taking the platform that he has and exposing a lot of those bands to the world. Like good on him for doing that. It's just that, like, I don't know, like, in this case, like, I don't know, I may be being a little bit too precious because this is a band I love, but I'm like, I don't know if that's the way that I would. If I was their PR guy, I don't know if that's what I would want to be the big story.
Yeah, well, another big story about Canadian band. This is kind of a more fun story, if you will. Career Suicide, they're back. First album after 8 years. They haven't named the new album, but it's going to come out pretty soon. They released their first single, kind of a demo-ish or an unmixed version called Cut and Run. And on it, it has Dallas Good of the Sadies. And I got to say, fellas, I'm not a mega Career Suicide fan, but I am a very big Career Suicide fan. This track was banging. It's exactly what I want from Career Suicide. And it kind of had a weird ending, which I enjoyed. It shows the band branching out a little bit, but there's still definitely Career Suicide. You guys dig this track?
I did. I dug this track. I'm a huge fan of Attempted Suicide, which was, I guess, the last real full length that they had out. It was a band that, like, in my head was just sort of gone and broken up for all eternity. So the fact that they were back together doing the kind of one-off shows was really cool. But the fact that they've gone together and are actually, like, you know, not only recording a record, but recording a record where they've looped in Dallas Good, and I'll talk about him in a minute, it's really interesting to me. So this track in particular, Jonah Falco of Fucked Up, it was, I guess, Career Suicide's guitar player. But I guess now that you got Dallas in the mix and him being, you know, Mr. Guitar God, I don't exactly know what they're doing live, but I guess Jonah's at least on this track, Jonah's playing drums.
And guitar too.
and guitar. So I mean, he's not doing that live, so I don't exactly know which of the two he's doing live. But like, Jonah Falco is a great drummer, so him drumming on this track is just, you know, the whole thing just fits really well. I mean, like, yeah, it's a demo track, it's unmastered or whatever, but it sounds really fucking good.
It sounds like a normal track, honestly. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't know how much mastering is necessarily gonna elevate your, you know, scuzzy hardcore band up from what it sounds like as a scuzzy hardcore band. But the where Dallas really comes in on this track is like, there's two kind of like screechy, crazy little guitar solos that come up at various points in this. Like, the first hits at about like 35 seconds into this song, and then there's a second later in the song, and that's where he comes into the mix. And he is a really interesting addition to this band. So like, I don't know if you guys know too much about the Sadies, but so the Sadies is a band that is it's a Canadian band. They are run by the Good Brothers. So Dallas and what is Dallas's brother here? Dallas and Travis Good. So Dallas and Travis, they're from a musical family. They're from them and like other members of their extended family are in a Canadian country group called the Good Brothers. And then the Sadies are this kind of like garage rocky / alt country band that plays. They all came up out of punk, but they don't play punk. But they play, they get themselves into a lot of interesting collaborations and interesting situations. So the big one that everyone probably knows about is that they were backing Nico Case for a long time. So if you have like her 2004 quasi live album called The Tigers Have Spoken, that's them playing on that. They also they did a whole record with John Doe of X called Country Club back in 2009. And their own records, at least in my opinion, are really good. And Dallas in particular is a great guitar player, but he keeps creeping back into the punk rock world, which is really interesting to see, because a lot of people that have come from punk and have gone on and to form some sort of career in another genre of music, they usually stay there. But he keeps coming back and doing stuff. So suddenly he's a member of Career Suicide now, and he produced the new TV Freaks record. He was just on an episode of Damien from Fucked Up's Turned Out a Punk podcast. So it's really cool to see him, you know, to see him come back and to do that. So I want to play a little bit from the Sadies to kind of cap this show off here, just to kind of show you guys what they do, what he does, because I think that they're underappreciated by the wider punk news audience. So they did a live record back in 2006. It was a double LP. It's probably my favorite live record, called In Concert Volume 1. It is the only volume of their In Concert series that they put out, so that's just what it's called. Has a ton of guest stars on it. Nico Case, of course, appears on it, but who else appears on this thing? John Spencer appears on it. John Langford's on there. Anyways, you can go find the whole listing. There's a whole bunch of people. Anyone who they'd ever really collaborated with are on this thing with them. And it's just a raucous, fun live show. So I'm going to play a song from In Concert Volume 1. It's an instrumental. It really sort of demonstrates the kind of cool stuff that Dallas Good does. And it kind of illustrates the kind of stuff that he could bring into a straight up hardcore band like Career Suicide. So the song that I'm going to play for you is called Cheat. So it is from 2006's In Concert record by the Sadies. So we'll be back to close up right after this. We'll be right back. we're back. That was Cheat by the Sadies off their live record in concert. This has been a long show, John.
Long show.
A lot of blah, blah, blahing.
Blah-bitty blah. Talking,
a lot of police, a lot of...
Drake.
I don't know. A lot of griping about things. So, yeah, there we go. If anyone wants to send us an email, it is podcast@punknews.org. You know, if anyone wants to send us, you know, $30,000 to build a recording studio, do that too. That's really all for this week. Any closing words, John, Tom?
Here's my closing words. If you ever find yourself in a position where the police are pulling you over or being aggressive towards you, de-escalate the situation. Don't argue with a police officer. Make it your goal to get out of the situation without getting locked up or without getting in a confrontation. If you have to take some sort of a ticket because of it, take it and fight it in front of the judge. You're much better off fighting something in front of the judge than you are late at night by yourself with a police officer.
Tom's going to respond with, screw that, punch cops.
No, I was thinking, you know, closing words would be like, you know, a couple words. I was going to go for like, you know, smell you later, but...
Tom, we got to close that.
John's going on like this diatribe about the legal system.
But Tom, yeah. I'm going to close it out when you say that catchphrase, Tom. Say that catchphrase.
Smell you later.